Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hope When Your Heart is Breaking, Finding God's Presence in Your Pain by Ron Hutchcraft. And this is Ron Hutchcraft. To the life and memory of my Karen, the love of my life, I'm forever grateful for her enduring love, her undying loyalty, her life-changing wisdom, her belief in me, when I deserved it and when I didn't. Her uncompromised honesty, her delightful unpredictability, and her profound walk with God, and her incomparable laugh. She was so much more than my better half. She made my half so much better than it ever could have been without her. Only heaven will show how much of what I've done and what I've become is because God gave me Karen. My beyond words gratitude goes to our three children. Lisa, Doug, and Brad, and to Rick and Anna and Sarah, the amazing people they married, and to my selfless sister-in-law, Valerie. Their love, their support, and encouragement have been the difference over and over again. This is Before You Begin, the foreword by my friend Johnny Erickson Tata. You've been through it. A whirlwind of devastations that ripped through your sanity, or a haunting depression that lingers like a low-grade fever, or it could be the insistent nagging of chronic pain. It happened to me the other night. As a quadriplegic, my husband Ken must position me on my side with pillows so I can sleep. Sensing pain on the rise and knowing I would not be able to adjust myself, my breathing got shorter. "Pray that I won't lose hope," I whispered to Ken. I'm always amazed at how often our hope is put to the test. A festering sore, a pinched nerve, the slow ticking of the clock, or the terror of feeling all alone in your struggle. Like me, when paralysis and pain nearly overwhelm me, it drains almost all hope out of my heart. Almost. That's the story of Ron Hutchcraft. When I first read this book, I was stunned. I've never seen Ron without a winsome, confident smile and a bounce in his step. His faith is strong, his calling is clear, and I don't think the man ever misses an opportunity to tell others about Jesus. Ron is the picture of assurance, strength, and resolve, but then the untimely death of his beloved life partner almost took him out of the battle. Almost. It is why I found Hope When Your Heart is Breaking to be such a blessing. Ron invites the listener into the innermost chamber in his heart, a place not many strong men even speak of, let alone reveal. It's a broken place. And when he describes his pain, you feel as though he's limping on shards of glass. But it is what makes this book believable, authentic, convincing. So when this seasoned student of God's Word invites you to take the same path that led him up and out of emptiness, you listen. You follow his directives. You trust his guidance through the hope-filled pages of Scripture. Hope When Your Heart is Breaking is your husky, brave-hearted guide through dark valleys into the fresh air of biblical hope. The content may be splattered with pain, but you will find there eternal principles that will be a light for your path. Do not fear if your world is almost splitting apart at the seams. Just take your favorite coffee to your easy chair. Get started listening, and let Ron bring you back from the edge of almost. Johnny Erickson Tata, Johnny and Friends International Disability Center, 2020. This is an introduction, Hope As Real As the Hurt. It was, as the saying goes, a dark and stormy night. We just finished an event on a Native American reservation led by a team of inspiring Native young people. All night, those storm clouds had hovered around the basketball court, but mercifully held off during the event. And once we were safely in the church basement where we were staying, those angry skies blew their top. After a lightning strike that sounded as though it was moving in, we were suddenly plunged into pitch-black darkness. The only thing worse than the lightning was the girl screaming. Well, we couldn't see anybody or anything, and with a nasty storm sounding off outside, well, it was creepy. Eerily quiet for a basement full of young people. After a few nervous minutes in the dark, someone found a candle. Anybody got a match? Yep. One precious candle and one priceless match. I cannot begin to tell you the change in that room when that little flame flickered to life. It wasn't much, just a little light, but it changed everything. In our personal dark times, and we all have them, that little flame has a name. It's called hope, and it changes everything. But that flame can be fragile, too. It can be extinguished all too easily and leave us alone and afraid in the dark again. Hope has been taking a beating in our generation. The late United States Senator John McCain said not long before his passing, "The world is in greater turmoil than at any other time in my lifetime." The future we might have been confident of not so long ago now is looking increasingly uncertain. You can feel the unease, the anxiety, even anger. As we absorb each day's breaking news, it seems as if there's a tsunami of mega problems that overwhelms our answers. Our headlines are dominated by the unpredictable, the unthinkable. Our politics are chaotic and toxic. The financial world is vulnerable. And our safe places aren't safe anymore. It's increasingly disturbing to contemplate the kind of world our children and grandchildren will have to navigate without a map. One friend summed it up pretty well. It just seems like nothing is working. Again and again, we're hit with how quickly the flame of hope can go out. A storm, a quake, a pandemic, an accident, a breakup, a job loss, a financial disaster, bad news from the doctor. Life's unexpected losses keep reminding us how insecure our security is, how not in control we really are, how quickly our go-to person or thing can be gone. It turns out hope is more fragile than we knew. People and anchors who secure our lives are more losable than we realized. I know. One night, the amazing woman I had loved since I was 19 was by my side at our grandson's graduation. The next afternoon, she was gone. Whenever I would come home from work or a trip, I'd head for our great room and immediately look over at Karen's blue recliner. I could see her beautiful gray hair, her crown of glory, as I came through the door. I would know my baby was there, and the world was okay. But that day, the blue chair was empty, and I would never see her crown of glory there again. The loss was incalculable. It touched every part of my life and my future. And suddenly my personal world was turned upside down. The light had gone out. Oh, how I needed hope. And oh, what I have learned about what hope is and what it isn't. By the nature of my People Helping Life's work, I've walked with many through their dark valleys, jobs, marriage, divorce, children, faith, failure, heartbreak, and yes, grief. And I've learned about hope what only real life can teach. Grief isn't just about losing a person you love. That's certainly the big one, but definitely not the only one. Loss comes in many forms: losing your marriage, losing your dream, losing your health, losing your job, your income, your retirement. Losing a child emotionally or spiritually. Losing a treasured relationship. Or the future you had planned. Or the quiet grieving of what was lost or taken from you in the past. Wherever there's loss, there's grieving. And wherever there's grieving, there are choices. Some lead to hope and healing. Some lead to more hurt and more grief. In J.R.R. Tolkien's trilogy, The Lord of the Rings, Two characters are discussing the looming invasion by sinister forces that threatens their lives in Middle Earth. I was struck by how aptly it describes our human experience when a dark season of loss upends our life. "I wish it need not have happened in my time," said Frodo. "So do I," said Gandalf, "and so do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us." End of quote. Indeed, we have no choice about the loss we are grieving. I have no choice about my Karen's passing. But my future would not be decided primarily by her death, but by what I did with that heart-rending loss. So if you were to ask me what this book is about, and I had to do it in four words, I'd say loss, grief, choices, hope. Not hope the concept, but hope the experience, hope the choice. For hope to overcome despair in life's dark valleys, it has to be something more than the syrupy, unanchored variety usually offered to us. More than the Wikipedia definition of hope as, quote, an optimistic attitude of mind based on expectation of positive outcomes, end quote. The hope needs to be as real as the hurt, as strong as the grief, as compelling as the fear, as powerful as the pull to give up. So what's here is not philosophical. It's deeply, deeply personal, down-to-earth practical and real. I've seen hope that failed to deliver, like a light that goes out when you're in the dark. But I've also seen the kind of hope that keeps lighting up the darkness. Defiant hope. Hope that finds the healing presence of God Himself in the midst of the rubble. A hope that shakes its fist at despair and fear and shouts, "No, you can't have me." That's worth writing about. And I hope worth hearing about. Part 1. The Flag Over the Rubble. Chapter 1. Emotional Oxygen. But I know somehow that only when it is dark enough can you see the stars. Dr. Martin Luther King. Code Blue. The announcement that summons all available medical personnel to a life-or-death emergency, except this day, it was the person I loved more than anyone in the world. My wife's procedure that day was really just a test, a heart catheterization to check her arteries. I was passing the waiting room time, tackling a couple of items on my to-do list. Then that announcement, Code Blue. Never occurred to me that it could be my Karen. It was. I knew as soon as the waiting room door opened and I saw the look on the doctor's face. Later, I would learn that her lungs had suddenly been overwhelmed with 7.5 liters of liquid. She was drowning, and no one knew. Until the doctor said, "I don't like how her color has changed." My mind went into overdrive, flooded with what this could mean. Had I held the love of my life for the last time? I've done my whole life with her. How can I do the rest of it without her? I was gasping for emotional oxygen. I was desperate for hope. Gasping for air. In medical terms, they bagged my wife that Code Blue day, using a respirator bag to push life-saving oxygen into her lungs to save her from literally drowning right in front of them. Drowning is a pretty fair description of how it feels emotionally when one of life's sledgehammers hits. In those moments, it seemed to knock the breath out of us. The death of a marriage. The diagnosis, it could mean either a death sentence or a life sentence of pain. The life-scarring choice made by your prodigal son or daughter. The caregiving that is pushing you to the limit. The "your mother and I are getting a divorce" that shatters your security. The crisis of hope can come from the painful past that pursues you wherever you go. That we don't need you anymore from the company you've given so much to. The verdict that you won't be able to have children. The devastating failure. For most of us, there has been, or there will be, that crushing time when we are desperate for a life preserver. We are drowning. Like the day when Laura learned her husband was suddenly arrested for sexual crimes with underage girls. Or the day Greg and Tammy were informed that their 5-year-old daughter had terminal leukemia. Or when the one man Beth had learned to trust, her mother's boyfriend, sexually assaulted her. Or that awful day when the love of my life was gone in one life-shattering moment. God had graciously given her back to me 10 years ago after her Code Blue crisis. But now the woman I adored, the only person I've done every day of my adult life with, was suddenly gone. Most of us know the feeling on some level, a loss that levels us, a storm that obscures the sun we've always navigated by, a blow that leaves us feeling lost on a road with no map, gasping for air, grasping for a life preserver. Wimpy hope. Hope really is the emotional oxygen that keeps us going. Things will get better. It doesn't have to be the way it's always been. Something good is about to happen. The dictionary variously defines hope as, quote, a feeling of expectation, or a desire for certain things to happen, or grounds for believing something good may happen, and intending, if possible, to do something. Nice. But not enough. Not for the 7.5 life quakes, the Category 5 storms. We need more than a feeling, a desire, or an optimistic attitude. The blows are heavy. A lot of hope is hope light. Too wimpy to bring us back when we can barely breathe. And no match for the moments that seem to shatter hope. Hope has to be more than when you wish upon a star, or crossing your fingers, or just quoting inspiring slogans from a motivational speaker. We need something more muscular, more durable, more authentic. There is hope like that. I know. It's the air I'm breathing right now that's sustaining each of the shell-shocked people I mentioned earlier. But it doesn't come from your circumstances. It comes from your choices. The flag in the rubble. You should turn on the TV. An airplane just crashed into one of the World Trade Center towers. A family member called to alert me. Who could have possibly known the unspeakable tragedy we were about to see unfold that fateful September day? We'd been to the top of the World Trade Center many times. I knew someone who worked in an office there. To see those seemingly indestructible towers crumble to dust before our eyes? There are no words for it. News anchors usually report the news dispassionately, not on September 11th, 2001. Like most of us, they could not conceal their disbelief and grief. Suddenly, we were feeling something Americans were not used to feeling. Vulnerable. Our hallowed space between two protecting oceans had been brutally invaded, and we would never feel the same kind of safe again. For a few hours, there were some hopes that a massive rescue effort could still save many lives. Those hopes were short-lived. An evacuation order was issued to all firefighters searching in the rubble. By late that afternoon, hope was hard to find. And then, the flag. 3 weary firefighters. The dusty flag they had recovered from a boat in the harbor. They couldn't possibly have known what the simple act of raising that flag over that heartbreaking pile of rubble would mean. It remains the most iconic image of a generation's darkest day. Or as USA Today said in their next edition, it was hope on a day when it seemed that all hope was gone. It flew above the wreckage of a heart-shattering day and seemed to say against a backdrop that appeared to represent only despair, "It isn't over, folks. There's hope." Yes, defiant hope. The counterpunch. Truck drivers see it all the time. I've seen it a few times when we've needed to drive through the night. Comes about the time you've opened the window on a frigid night and you've turned to the most annoying radio station you can find because the night is getting long and your eyelids are staying a little too long in the down position. And to top it off, it seems like the dark has gotten darker as morning approaches. And suddenly, there it is. A dim but distinct glow in the eastern sky. Oh, it's still really dark for the most part, but the glow will grow. And as it brightens, so does the horizon. Still dark, but something's happening out there, and you know the long night isn't going to be forever. There's light on the edges, and the light is pushing aside a wider and higher swath of that numbing darkness. Ultimately, there's that glorious moment when, preceded by glowing clouds, the sun teases the horizon, and in minutes the darkness is lost. The sun has won, and the first light that had only brightened the horizon soon illuminates the whole landscape. That's my picture of hope. That's why on many mornings I stand at the window watching the sunrise. Every sunset in my lifetime has been followed by a sunrise, without fail. By virtue of the people helping work I do, I've walked with many through their darkest nights. And beginning the day I lost my wife, my baby, I believe I've been walking through mine. And I'm ready to venture a real-life definition of hope, of defiant hope. Hope is a buoyant confidence, acknowledging the hurt, but anchored in an unseen but certain reality. No, not wishful thinking. No, not inspirational slogans, not escapist denial, but a confidence that squarely faces the loss and the unanswered questions, yet chooses not to be defined by them. Rather, to trust life's grand weaver to make something meaningful, even beautiful, out of these dark threads. Hope requires choices that defy the seeming hopelessness you may feel. Ahead, we will explore five of life's hope robbers, along with the choices that offer short-term relief, but long-term, only more pain. More importantly, we will discover the choices that will help us breathe the life-restoring oxygen of hope. Choices that don't deny, but do defy the pain of your past, the grief in your heart, the wilderness that surrounds you, the danger in our world, the seemingly unfixable brokenness of your marriage, the bitterness that seethes in your soul, the failure that has made you not want to get up, the sad story that has been much of your life, the person or situation that seems like it will never change. There is a way to make it through the darkest night. There is a way to raise a flag of hope over the rubble. It's called defiant hope. Chapter 2. Sinking ship, unsinkable you. When you're at the end of your rope, tie a knot and hang on. Theodore Roosevelt. It's nice to have a friend who has a sailboat, or as my friend Dave used to say, a hole in the water into which you pour money. His boat wasn't just for him and his family, it was for the enjoyment of his friends, too. Our family has some rich memories of hours spent with him on Long Island Sound. My wife and I celebrated a wedding anniversary by spending the night on that boat. Not at sea, of course, just rocked asleep by the water as the boat sat anchored in the harbor. Dave decided to do a night on the boat, too. During a hurricane. He didn't invite me, and that was fine. His report on his rock and roll night, "Man, the storm blew me all around, but it didn't blow me away. Thanks to the anchor." I think that's what my dad wanted the night before his open-heart surgery. His anchor. That procedure was relatively new when the doctors decided it was my father's best option. Needless to say, he had plenty of justifiable anxiety as the day of that massive surgery neared. He asked me to read something to him from the Bible. "Could you read the 23rd Psalm?" Good choice. That particular section of the Bible has been a source of hope and an anchor for countless people at critical moments. So as he lay in his hospital bed, eyes closed to focus, I started reading the familiar words of King David. "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul." That's Psalm 23, verses 1 to 3. I think it was the words that followed that he most wanted to hear. "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Psalm 23, verses 4 and 6. Those words were for me at once comforting to hear and hard to hear. Dad seemed at peace when I finished reading. There was hope in that ancient shepherd psalm. He never regained consciousness after that surgery. He lingered for a month, but then he was gone. In a medical sense, my dad died that day in Maine. Biblically, he relocated to the house of the Lord forever. My Category 5 storm. It was tough losing my dad. It was devastating losing my wife. This was a storm that rocked me to the core and tested everything I've ever held on to. Years ago, I asked our friend Nancy how she was doing since her accomplished husband had died. It was the first time I'd seen her since that happened. I've never forgotten what she told me. "Ron, this is the final exam, and you can't cram for it. You're either ready or you're not." It really is the final exam, and the greatest hope crisis of my life. No Karen. For anyone who's known us, Ron and Karen has been one word. Hard to say one name without the other. And that's how our life has been since we first fell in love. A loving, powerful partnership on so many levels. And suddenly, it's just Ron. I was going to need everything I'd ever known, ever heard, ever seen, ever learned about hope. And more. Like my dad, and like millions of others throughout the ages, my heart landed in the only harbor where I could be safe, with the only anchor that could hold me in a storm this merciless. I went to the world's best-selling book, the Bible. And there really is hope there. Not up-in-the-clouds hope, but anchored hope. Once again, my life-learned definition. Hope is a buoyant confidence, acknowledging the hurt, but anchored in an unseen but certain reality. A crisis of hope is usually triggered by losing one of our life anchors. A person, financial security, health, job, marriage, independence, or just our confidence in the future. But in the face of loss, hope is buoyant confidence. You can push a cork under the water, but as soon as you let go, it's coming back up. You can sink it, but you can't drown it. Defiant hope doesn't mean you don't go down. It means you don't stay down. Whether your storm is from grief or failure, abuse or abandonment, disease or divorce, you may very well wonder when it first hits. The question is whether you stay down. You didn't have a choice about the hit or the hurt, but you do have a choice about the hope. Dropping anchor.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?